Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. While that is no easy task, I have a couple of analogies I want to bring to you. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that 100%, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms itself into the butterfly. As if that's not enough, then it has to struggle in order to get out of the cocoon, in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. No easy task, right? Just like our people who I mentioned at the beginning. And today, I have a great guest with me. Her name is Deborah Spencer, and she has a wonderful story about how a loved one of hers has busted through limits and how she is also helping many other people in her area bust through those limits. So, Deborah, thank you for joining me. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me, Shelley. This is great. I love your platform.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Deborah Spencer, as you just stated, and I have a daughter with autism who's 25. Her name is Dominique. We live in the great state of Texas, but I'm originally from California. I have a son that is 36. I have a granddaughter that is 11. I've been married, will be 40 years next month. My husband's retired Navy. He did 20 years in the military. And we relocated to Texas in 2005 with our little one. My son at that time was in college, and we had Dominique here. So we knew we were coming to a state where the services were not as great for the special needs as it were in California, but we took the quantum leap for family and other reasons, and so knew that we were going to have somewhat of a struggle, but did not know that the services were quite the way that they were when we actually got here. We did pick our school district intentionally, and I was in corporate, was in the insurance industry for 31 years. I retired about 5 years ago and launched a nonprofit to provide resources and services for families while they're in the in-between stages of waiting on services, just because of the way the services are ported here in the state of Texas.
That's very interesting. So first of all, thank you to your husband for his service. My husband didn't retire from the military, but did give 8 years of his life to the military. And so yes. I do have a great deal of respect for all military members, but also the spouses, because we serve in a capacity as well. And so talk about that a little bit, how him, because I think if I have my stories correct, and I hope I do, that you guys didn't stay in the same place as far as like he was out deployed and you were home. So yes. Can you talk to that a little bit about how that works?
Absolutely. Yes. So my husband was in weapons, nuclear weapons specifically. So there were some tours that were unaccompanied. He could not take his family, even though he may have been stationed in Mississippi. The ship was going to be deployed and he was going to be on special missions and things of that nature. So we made a decision that I would stay rooted in San Diego or Southern California. So we lived up and down like San Diego, Long Beach, Rancho Cucamonga, and he would, you know, go to the different duty stations. So I was somewhat of a single parent because he did 15 years at sea. So he did 20 years total. So he only did 5 years of shore duty, which makes it very challenging with a typical family. And then you add the mix of a special needs child. And we were not near family. My family was about 3 hours away in the same state, but not in the immediate city. So that I had to navigate as well. So it was quite challenging because my son was very active. He played all the sports. And, you know, so then I had this little one because my kids are 11 and a half years apart. And I knew that my husband, what his job was in the military, was crucial of me being able to give support and keep the stress away since he was away. So then you have to live a whole nother life, right? So now you have to pretend that you're this strong force that can keep it together and get it done when literally it's taking a toll on the whole family. But because he's frontline, he was in Desert Storm, Foxtrot. So there's no way that I could give him that weight with what he was up against. So it was challenging, to say the least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, thank you for your service. As I said, my husband, he tells his students or anyone who asks him, I flew a desk for 8 years. You know, he didn't have to go out. He was in the military during Desert Storm, but he was in the Air Force, and he was an operations and programmer. So he was working with computers. So he didn't have to go out and face any of that sort of thing. But, I did have the privilege to go to one station with him during his time. We were able to be stationed in England together. And so when we're talking about deployments, what was an average length that he would be gone? Or was there even an average?
So on average, anywhere between 6 to 8 months. And then, but the preparation, right, they call it rough tray, the preparation for that also takes them away, right? So they're preparing to go out. So they're doing their missions of going in and out. And because he had the special clearance of nuclear stuff, he was pulled away for some special task for 3 months at a time. You know, he went to Iceland for 3 months. He ended up going to Europe for a couple months, and then they ended up having him go to Mississippi. So on top of just his regular rotation of sea life on the ship, he was also pulled out in those special missions. And sometimes we got maybe a weekend's notice, like on Thursday, he's leaving Sunday or Monday. And for me, it was very difficult because I didn't have the bandwidth or the up close experience of military life. I had a couple of uncles that were in the military, but by the time that I came on the scene to understand that, they were not in the military. So I didn't come from a military family or military background. So you could see how that even took a toll on our relationship at some point. And then my son, like, he doesn't understand that this is his dad's job when Johnny's dad is at every game and he's home. So you're having to buffer that. And then you add a special needs child. And there's a saying that says the stress that a special needs mom sometimes is under is equivalent to someone in combat. So I actually live that, right? And so that, and then I tried to also, and I've always been a person that was involved in community. So I felt like, you know, when you're attached to something, you can understand it better. So what did I do? I took on being the liaison between the spouses and the command. Like, really, Deborah, what's wrong with you? So moms that, you know, they have a flat tire, they don't know what to do, the car breaks down, the kids are acting up. So I am the go-between so that the husbands can stay deployed and focused, and then the families can still operate. What was I thinking?
You were thinking, I have a
God gives us an incredible strength to do only what we can do through him.
Yeah. Amen. Absolutely. So I want to go back to that statement that you mentioned, because I have witnessed that. I do not have a child with a disability, so I can't say that I've experienced it, but I have had the privilege of knowing dozens and dozens of parents who have a child with a disability. And then I also, which I don't even know if I told you this, that I wrote a book where I interviewed families and they shared what their journeys were like. And having been a special education teacher for as long as I was, and I was able to work with many of my students and their families, some of them for as long as 10 years, but most of them at least 2 years. And so I thought I had a decent idea of what the life was like. And when I started the interview process, I realized that as much as I knew, I still maybe only had the tip of an iceberg or a thimbleful of knowledge compared to what is really going on every single day in the life of a mom. Specifically, most of the interviewees were moms. I do have a couple of dads that were able to participate, but most of the people were the moms that shared the stories. And that's one of the reasons that And I felt that God had led me to write this book, that I think he wanted these stories out there because
yes.
it is so crucial. You know, like I said, I was involved in special education, so I at least was able to see some of the things happening. But you have really, you know, probably 90% or higher of the population just in the United States, but really across the world, who don't mm-hmm. even have the amount of experience that I have. And so it's very, I'm very proud of the book, and I keep doing this because it's sitting off to my side. But, but you know, to say that what a special needs mom deals with on a daily basis is what a soldier is comparable to what a soldier deals with in combat is just, I think, so telling. And I think probably needs to be shouted from the rooftops because yes. we need those of us who are on the outside, we need to come alongside and be supportive of whichever or both parents are going through these things, because you can't do it alone. I mean, that Mm-mm. whole saying, it takes a village to raise yep. a child, that's a typically that's right. developing child. It takes two or three or four villages
yes.
to raise a child with a disability. Yes. And I keep saying disability, and I hope that's not offensive to you. I switch back and forth between special needs and disability.
Oh, that's fine.
I feel like we need to do better as family, as friends, as coworkers, as neighbors, as fellow churchgoers, at whatever the association is to a family that has someone with a disability in it. We need to reach out. We need to do better.
Absolutely.
To support the mom or the dad, but mm-hmm. I mean the whole family really, because
yes.
I've had a few siblings on this show too. And, you know, they talk about the toll that it takes on them. Most of them haven't realized the toll until much later in their mm-hmm. lives when they look back and go, oh, so, you know, they don't always understand it when they're going through it, but a mom and a dad, you understand it minute by minute, second by second. So, thank you for your service to a military person, but also for the care that you are giving to Dominique and to those around you in your surrounding community. So let's talk. I want to talk first about Dominique and some of the limits that she has busted through. And then I want to go into what you're doing with Dominique Cares. Is that okay with you?
Okay, that's fine.
All right. So tell me about her experiences in school. Tell me about some of those things, you know, like, I know it says on your website that you found out when she was four mm-hmm. that she has autism. So yes. kind of walk us through what that was like for you.
Sure.
Yep. And all of those kind of.
So our journey, it was a little different. Of course, we had already had a son. He was 11 and a half years old when Dominique was born. And because of my husband's commitment to the military, you know, we had decided, you know, we were going to wait in between children. And I've always had a desire to adopt. So we started when my husband, he was still actually on sea duty. We were kind of trying to time it to close to him having a little bit of shore duty. So I looked into the adoption process and we said, you know, but my husband was not 100%, you know, in. And with that, you really both need to be 100% in.
Absolutely.
So he's like, well, I think it's a noble thing. I think it's a great thing, but I think we should try to have our own first. And I was approaching 35 and we had said we needed to have our second child, you know, by the time I was 35. So we did try. It took a while for me to get pregnant. And then I was going to be delivering when I was going to be 35. I was 34 when I got pregnant. I was going to be delivering at 35. So our doctor said, you know, we recommend that you have an amniocentesis because you're going to be delivering at 35 years old. I'm like, okay. And at first I was like, oh, we don't really need to do that. And my husband was adamant about, you know, me having an amnio. I'm like, okay. So we have the amnio and we're just thinking that, you know, we're just going to find out if we're having a boy or a girl. My husband at the time had to make a trip to Salt Lake with the military. So he's in Salt Lake, Utah. I go on my lunch hour to the, doctor to get my results, right. That I'm having a boy or a girl. And I go in, he's a geneticist and he is sitting across from me, and he says, "Your child's going to have webbed hands, cub feet, cleft palate, heart, kidney, lung problems. Highly unlikely she'll be healthy or normal. I strongly suggest that you terminate your pregnancy."
Wow.
Shelley, God is my witness. I looked at him and I said, "How do you do your job? I'm here by myself."
Oh.
I had no knowledge that he was going to unload this on me.
Right.
And then I said, "This is based on what?" And he hands me a one pager. It's based on this. There, we tested the amniotic fluid, and it's something possibly called Prader-Willi. And I'm like, I just could not even gather myself. I just started crying.
Right.
And I went to the car. I was supposed to go back to work. This was on my lunch hour. And I went and got in the car, and I was crying. I called my mom, and she's like, "Calm down." And I went home, and I called my mother-in-law, and I said to both my mom and my mother-in-law separately, I said, "The world is too cruel. I love Jesus, but I can't bring a child in the world that's going to be facing those type of challenges." So it had me question, you know, my faith, my belief system in abortion. I mean, I was like there.
Right.
And my mother-in-law said to me, you know, "No matter what, we're going to love this baby, no matter what." And I called my husband, and I got him on the phone, and I shared the same thing with him, and he echoed the same thing. He's like, "That goes against what we believe. You know, this is just us. You know, we're going to take it to the next step." So the next level was to have a level 2 ultrasound. And so I said, "Okay, we'll do that. Maybe, I'm not sure." And then I called a girlfriend of mine who lived in San Diego. At the time, we were living in Rancho Cucamonga. My husband was doing some recruiting duty. And so I called her, and she said, "Don't you think you need a second opinion?" I said, "I probably do." And she said, because she was in the military, but she worked for the government. She had gotten out. And she said, "Let me make a phone call." So Pilar, she called, and she said, "I have someone that you can call." And this is nothing but God. So she gives me the phone number to this top geneticist in the country, top 5, Dr. Jones. I call their office. They are amazing. And they said, "Okay, so this is what we want you to do. We need your husband to get his blood drawn, your son. We're going to do all this testing on everybody. And then we need you to do a level 2 ultrasound, blah, 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 blah." I'm like, "Okay." And they say, "Contact your, you know, doctor's office. Let them know you're going to do a second opinion." And I called them, and it was an HMO. I will leave it nameless. And they said, "Well, you can have a second opinion within our structure. But if you go outside of the structure, we won't pay for the second opinion." And I'm thinking, well, that's really not a second opinion now, is it?
Right.
Okay.
Not of my choice, at least. Right.
That, you know, that's your opinion validated. Okay. So anyway, right. So I said, "Well, no, we're going to do the second opinion." So I get started on this, and we do, and we do the level 2 ultrasound, and we're going right along, and she has her, everything's developed, 10 fingers, 10 toes, lips are fine. They said, "The only thing we cannot measure is brain activity." And Dr. Jones said the most amazing thing to me. He said, "I cannot tell you what the end result will be, but I have been doing this a very long time. And your family will do what needs to be done for your baby." He said, "I just believe that in my heart. And I say to you to move forward in your pregnancy." And I did not know this at the time, but I have a goddaughter who is special needs, and her doctor, the female, her Dr. Marilyn Jones, they were husband and wife. So I actually had the husband, and she actually had the wife, and I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
And it ended up being that when Dominique was born, you could tell that they were in awe, because there was like a whole team of doctors were there when she was born. And she ended up, you know, not having any of those things. All of her organs were developed perfectly fine, but she did develop late as far as walking and talking and sitting up, you know. So we knew there was something. And of course, we kept being told that, oh, she's just a baby and you guys baby her and she's the youngest and you haven't had a baby in forever. And, you know, but and of course, I wanted to believe all of that. My husband, from the beginning, he was like, yeah, there's something quite not right with her development. But I was in complete denial because I felt like we had prayed. I trusted God. We were Christians. You know, that whole checklist of we're good people. Right. You know, we're all we go to church. We serve. We, you know, all of the things that you think guarantee you, right, at your heart's desire. It was unfolding before me. And I was in total denial. And my husband was listening to because I hadn't really gone beyond just her regular pediatrician. My husband and my girlfriend both were listening to a talk show. And the talk show was talking about the symptoms of autism. And they both separately said to me, we believe Dominique is autistic. And I said, no, she's not. They said, well, she's not walking. She's not sitting up. She's not making words. And then she started to make words and then she started to regress in her speech. And so then, of course, the harsh reality set in that, okay, Mama Bear, you got to move off of the denial square. You've got to face this. And that is something that I share with parents all the time. It was one of the hardest things that I had to swallow, is that there's something wrong with my child. You start to blame yourself. Your circle changes. People shun what they don't understand. They don't know how to help you, you know, and I'm thinking that people are going to get it by osmosis. And that's one of the things I said, you have to build a support team and you have to build a village, but you have to be vulnerable to that. You know, people can only help you to the degree that you allow them to. And for me, I'm this independent person. I've gone to college. I have a career. I can do it. I can multitask, you know. All of the tricks of the enemy, right, start to well up in you that, you know, if we don't speak about it, you know, monkey see monkey, if we don't talk about it, if we don't speak about it, if we don't look at it, it's going to just go away. And so I had to get my head out of the sand and get myself out of the way. And I had to allow people to help me. And my circle changed.
Yeah,
it did. You know, some of the people that, you know, they just didn't know how to help me and I didn't know how to allow them to help me because I was just sitting there like, oh, you know, she's not really talking, not wanting to talk about it. And so it made it very challenging and very difficult for me. And we went down that path. And of course, my husband's in and out. So I just started throwing myself into work, more work, throwing myself into the development of my son. And then Dominique was just kind of coming along, you know, and all the kids loved her. She was an easy baby to take care of. So all of the basketball players and parents, they just passed her along and she loved it, being coddled and hugged and loved. And she just sat there, but she was not developing. And so that is where, you know, it changed. It changed for us and all of the things. And so the biggest second nightmare was, where do I go from here?
Right.
Because the doctor is saying, yeah, she's not developing. She's not hitting milestones. But no one pointed me to a place, to a space, to a person. So then we started trying to go through, okay, we got to get this. We got to go to this specialist. We got to go here. We got to go there. And that to me, Shelley, was harder than the diagnosis because you're thinking you're dealing with professionals that have dealt with families, that have dealt with people that could say, okay, Miss Deborah, let's walk through this process together. This is what you need to do. And that's one of the things with Dominique Cares. I know I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, is one of the things that I wanted us to be. I wanted us to be a place where you contact us and we help you find the therapist, the second opinion, the dentist. I don't want to send you on a Google goose chase of trying to find something when you're already dealing with the diagnosis, the denial, the, you know, just the grief of a special needs child. And I know some people don't agree with that, but it is, because you're dying to the child that you thought you were going to have. And that is a grief all in itself. And you go through all of those stages with that diagnosis.
Yeah. And I so appreciate your real honesty in your story, because mm-hmm. I think it is so key that moms especially, but for dads too, that they understand that they're going to have some feelings that they might be ashamed of.
Yes.
That they certainly, they wished they didn't have. And they may try to push those things aside or down mm-hmm. or ignore them. But it is so important to address those things. There is a beautiful poem called Welcome to Holland. Have you ever read that
poem? Oh, yes, I have. I love that. Yes.
Yeah, it's by Emily Kingsley.
Yes, and that's one of my favorites.
Again, I have not walked in your shoes, but from yes. what other parents have told me, it does do a really good job of yes. giving explanation a little bit of what it's like. Because you do, without realizing it, when a person becomes pregnant or a loved one becomes pregnant, you automatically get a picture in your mind of what that child will do. Even if you try not to, mm-hmm. you do. And then you go through the pregnancy and you inadvertently develop ideas, of what the child will do at this age or that age or when mm-hmm. they're an adult, or, what kinds of things you might get to do with that child, mm-hmm. when once they're born. And those are all wonderful things.
Right.
And then the child is born. And sometimes parents find out as soon as the child is born, sometimes even though the diagnosis wasn't exactly correct, sometimes people find out during pregnancy that, a child mm-hmm. will be developmentally delayed or something is not going to develop correctly. Or, as in Dominic's case, it was a few years later. Mm-hmm. There was always that kind of hint in the back of your mind,
yes.
but it wasn't until she was four that you had an official diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And at that point, whether you've realized it or not, that vision you had is shattered.
It is. It is.
And I do think, and there's actually, I had a woman on several months ago, Gina Waterman, and mm-hmm. she is a grief therapist, and she specializes in working with parents whose children have some sort of disability, because
yes.
she herself has walked that walk.
Yes.
And so for her to be able to, express and help families go through those kinds of, that's how I got introduced to you, wasn't it?
Yes, it is.
Sorry,
it is.
I forgot that.
Yes, I love Gina.
Yeah. And so.
I love her. She's amazing.
I think it's so important that mm-hmm. information is shared.
Yes.
And I know that there, because of the parents that I've spoken to that are in my book, I know there is that big hesitation, first of all, to share it, because you love your child. It's not
absolutely.
That you don't love your
absolutely.
Child.
Absolutely. But it's not the life that, I expected to have. So in that, your whole perspective, is kind of arrested, and you can do everything. And I remember someone saying to me, well, I met so-and-so and their kiddo had autism and they did A, B, C, D, and E, and their kid just excelled. And I'm happy for that. But we did a lot of some of those therapies that didn't work, because every individual is different. Right. And so, yeah. That kid may be driving now, that kid may go to the prom, kid may be able to live independently, but some of us, that is not our story.
Right.
We may never walk Dominique down the aisle. There are some things that
right.
we just may never be able to do. And like you said, it does not take away from the love, but we are caregivers. I've been a caregiver for 25 years, completely. She is more severe in her autism. She understands, but she is. So all of that, and you start to peek over the fence at other people's lives and you say, man, what about me?
Right.
It's a natural thing. Not that I can change any of that. But those are feelings and thoughts that I need to deal with, because if you don't deal with those things become trapped trauma in your own life. So right. I have to get those things out in a healthy way without being judged. I don't love her any right. less, but I tell people that I used to view it as a burden, because it's hard to watch. And then you think about your own mortality. What's going to happen to my child when I'm not here? Yeah. So, you know, as much as I love her, it sometimes has become a burden, you know, even though it has been a blessing, because I've learned so much from her. I appreciate some simple things that you take for granted. And then God allowed me to birth a nonprofit because of her, right? To help right. other families. So I get the two-sided coin, but it's real on both sides.
Right. Right. Exactly. That two-sided coin, it's mm-hmm. still a coin, no matter which way you look at it.
Yes.
It has value. Both sides of that coin have value, and understanding and being able to express it in a
yes.
comfortable, and I don't know that comfortable is the right word mm-hmm. because I don't know that it's comfortable, but in a way where you feel like you're not being judged
yes.
and you're not being looked at as, well, you had the option. You know, you didn't have to carry, you didn't have to, you know, this or that or the other thing. And, I take offense when I hear statements like that. And sadly, I have heard statements like that. And I unfortunately think you have probably been hinted at, or somebody has said that direct type of statement to mm-hmm, you. Mm-hmm. Because we have this really bad part of society or individuals that don't value all human life equally. And, you know, everyone has a purpose. Everyone that That's is on right. this planet has yep. a purpose.
Yes.
And to deny that someone has that purpose, maybe I can't see that purpose for someone else, but that doesn't change that person's purpose.
That's right. It doesn't. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm happy to hear you say that you've learned to take some things that most people take for granted and be very appreciative of those things. Mm-hmm. And the title of my book is called Those Who Can't Teach. And at the end of each chapter, except for my own personal chapter, I put in there the things that I learned mm-hmm. from either teaching the student, from being involved with the family, mm-hmm. however it is that I know this individual or their family. Because absolutely, I have learned so much. In fact,
yes.
I've said many times that I'm not sure who taught who more.
Right.
I was the teacher of my students, if I learned more from them or vice versa, or if it was an equal amount. What we learned were very different things.
Yes.
But I learned so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, I appreciate so many things that the average person takes for granted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, another thing, it really also gave me, you know, just a heart for those that struggle with decision making. You know, do I abort? Do I not? Do I give my child up? Do I terminate my rights as a parent? Do I, you know, all of those things. Mm-hmm. And there is no like hard and fast rule on that. It really is an individual thing that people need to be loved through, because I've had parents that their kids have become so aggressive. One family in particular, where her son is three times their size. They're in their 70s. The husband has had a triple bypass, and his behaviors are a detriment to them and himself. And they struggled with, you know, putting him in a place where he can be cared for, where they still have access to him, and the judgment that they faced, you know,
oh, yeah.
just the ridicule that they had to endure. It broke my heart, because yeah. the people that are speaking those things are not living that life. You know, exactly. that whole combat thing of what we're talking about. So that means that, you know, sleep is minimal for them. You know, you're just, even right. when Dominique used to elope, it's like, I don't remember, you know, having a good night's sleep. I mean, you're always up, you're checking, you got the house secured, you got cameras, you got alarms, but it's just something internal in you that just doesn't let you rest. And then the whole time you're out, you're on heightened alert, you know, right. so you're living this every single day. And even when you're not with your kid, when someone else has your kid, you're still worried to death. Okay, did they close the door? Did they do this? Did they do that? Do they still see where they are? Are they in view eye of them? You know, all of those things. And so when she was telling me her story of the hard decision they had to make because they had no family that could take him, and she just wept.
Yeah.
You know, because she, I mean, she said, I feel like I'm doing the wrong thing when the police are being called to her home. And she's like, I don't know what to do.
Right. Yeah.
And there's and so those... much that goes into this life. You know, you may see the highlight reel of, you know, of a success story, and we applaud that. But there are so many families that are living in the trenches that every single day is a struggle. Every day is a struggle. Right. And those are the people that get lost in the great divide. And we're happy for the success stories, but we can't forget that there are so many other stories where they don't have a village. They don't have a support group. They don't have access to resources.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I so appreciate you bringing all of that information out, because it is very sad. I have another show that I do called Friday with Fran, and she has raised two now adults that with disabilities, and one of her children is able to remain at home with her, but the other child, she had to make that agonizing decision for her own safety, because again, her child is much bigger than her.
Yes.
And you know, for and she herself became a person with a disability about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes.
And so she had to make that decision. And she said, you know, she's had some of the most awful comments made to her about, well, if you just loved them more, or, oh, you just, you know, you just sent them there to make it easier on yourself. No, it's something that, that, you know, she struggles with, even though he's in a safe environment. And, but, you know, she still, it's like, did I make the right decision? I mean, it's an everyday thing for her. Yeah. And Michael, thank you. Michael is a regular. I haven't been on for a long time. And so I'm glad that he is with us today. He also happens to be a parent, and I don't know if you can see his little profile. I don't know if it comes up big enough on yours.
Oh, yeah,
he actually has him and his little daughter in his profile picture.
Oh.
Sadly, Hannah passed away many years ago. But yeah, Michael, people love to pass judgment in a situation they have no idea about.
Yep.
You're absolutely, absolutely,
absolutely
right.
Correct. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. Well, I know he's an EMT. He said he's sorry he hasn't been here. He's been at work. Well, there are people who have emergencies. This is not an emergency, but I'm glad to have you join us today. So and the fact that you mentioned and what Dominique Cares does as far as helping the families find the resources. As a special education teacher, I knew what was available through that system. But outside of that system, if somebody would come to me and ask me, I really had nowhere. I had no idea of where to direct them. And then once I started having some of my former students' families that were, you know, now the student was 16, 18 years old, and they were talking to me about having to file for guardianship and, you know, finding services for when their child was completely out of the school system. And they were asking me for advice or finding daycare. I recently had a client of mine. I'm now an education consultant, master IEP coach, and I work with families to help them navigate through the special education process. And I recently had a single dad reach out to me. He's like, do you know of anyone in this area that might be able to watch my son who has autism? And I don't have those. I don't know those types of resources. And so the fact that you are compiling something or even just having it available that, hey, if you call Dominique Cares, you will be able to get this. So tell us more about that. And, you know, is it just strictly for your area, or is it for, you know, all across the United States?
Yes. Yeah, so we actually, it actually helps families in all states, not specific to Texas. We're physically in Texas, so of course the majority of our clients are from Texas, but we help all over. So basically what we do is we provide resources and services. We do parent training. We were doing those in person. And of course, with COVID, we went to a virtual platform, which really actually happened to kind of be a blessing, because then other people in other states can take advantage of those services. services as well. Some of the topics, you know, could just be as simple as IEPs and ARDS and 504s, you know, guardianship, you know, all of those things, different types of therapy. You know, talking about medications or just about getting your affairs in order, like special needs trusts and wills, and just how to navigate in your family or how to build your support team. So we do those because we want our parents and our caregivers to be to be able to advocate, you know, in that setting, whether it be with the school district or just, you know, with their service provider, if they're getting services through an agency like Regional Center in California or LifePath in Texas or whatever that entity is in your state. And then we also felt like we wanted to be able to help with holistic, healthy families. So these families have needs. They can have great incomes, but co-pays, high deductibles, and just general, and especially if you only because the mom or the dad is home taking care of the kiddos because maybe they can't work outside of the home because of their personal setup. So we wanted to be able to help offset any need that the family may have, whether it be a house payment, a car payment, car insurance, whatever. So we also provide grants for that as well. We definitely help offset the attorney's fees when it comes to guardianships or your special needs trusts or wills. A lot of our kids, if they're on more than, you know, two psychotropic medications, a lot of them don't qualify for life insurance. So if you don't have a child rider on them before they were diagnosed, or, you know, some type of group plan, you know, in the event that there is the demise of the family, that child, then we help with funeral costs as well. So we just wanted to be able to take the lid off and be able to do what is going to best suit that family and their need. That's and then incredible. We have a guide on the website that actually does have a list of resources, whether it be for an advocate, an attorney, just something as simple as where do I go and take Johnny to get a haircut because he has sensory issues, someone that is sensitive to the special needs population, dentists, all of that. You know, some of our kids have to be sedated just to have their teeth cleaned, which is my Dominique. So, you know, and a lot of times that sedation is not covered by insurance unless they find a cavity, a root canal is needed, or something of that nature. So we also help with that. So things that you may need that you can't afford, or it's going to just take your budget over for that month, we provide that as well. We also offer camps where the kids can be brought in for summer, Thanksgiving, spring break. They can come in because some of the parents, depending on the kid's behavior or their diagnosis, they may not be able to get into the regular camps that they have for special needs kids. So we can take those kids at our facility. So we offer that. And then we offer scholarships to high school students that are graduating, that are majoring in, you know, medicine, education, STEM, law. You know, we want to give back in that regard. And we do have interns that come in and help. And we actually utilize interns with special needs. We have a kiddo that's going to school in Houston. He's high functioning autistic. He volunteers because we want our kids to be able to have employable skills. So that gives them work experience. We partner with one of the school districts here and Texas Workforce. So we actually have kids that come to our facility every day while they're in high school to get work experience, and they come with a job coach. That way they may not be able to go to college, but they can contribute to society and earn, you know, some dollars and feel very valued and supported in that. So we offer that as well. So we're just trying to meet the needs of families that have, and that's Nazir. That's one of our kiddos that graduated and is in college right now. And he's doing very well. He's playing, running track. He plays the drums and he's high functioning autistic, but he volunteers with us in our summer intern program. So we do that as well. So it's an array of services. We offer transportation. So the parents, if they can't get the kids to us, we offer free transportation. We can pick them up and drop them back off. That sometimes helps with parents that are working. So we can pick the kiddo up from home and bring them back to the house or take them back to their grandmother's house who may be caring for them but doesn't drive. We're trying to make this as simple as possible because I get it. You know, I totally get it. So that's some of the things that we do at Dominique Cares.
That
just
is
a few of the things that we do.
Yeah, just a few. No big deal. I'm blown away because that is absolutely. Yeah, I agree with Michael. He says this is an amazing service. Thank you and bless you for this. We struggled with finding services as simple as a dentist when Hannah mm-hmm. was with us. We are in a pretty rural area here in yes. Southern Illinois. Yep. And so we don't have
those. Like, yeah. Those things that, you know, mm-hmm. yeah. So we're super, super excited, you know, about what we're doing. And you know, we're just thankful that we have an opportunity to serve. And the parents, you know, it's like a breath of fresh air for them. And we're grateful to be able to provide that.
Yeah, that is incredible. So where do you get your funding? Is this donation? Can people that are mm-hmm. watching, if they would like to donate, how would they do that?
Yes. The other thing that we do, because we really, really believe in a lot of information, because sometimes people just don't know where to go. We do a resource fair every year at one of the colleges here where we bring about 70 vendors in from dog therapists to dentists to all types of therapy, SSI, all of the things that you're going to be dealing with in life transition. And so we bring them under one roof. We have breakout sessions where you can actually dialogue with the doctors. You can dialogue with the attorney. You can dialogue with the special needs attorney and get your questions answered. We have people that come up from Austin that work for, you know, disability services. And so that way we have a sibling speak, so you can get it from the sibling's perspective. So we do those every year, usually the first Saturday in August. We didn't do it last year because of COVID, because the campus wasn't allowing it, but we've been doing those for about 3 years prior to COVID. So we offer that as well. We do offer a support group and mentoring for parents. We have a dad's group. We have a mom's group. You know, somebody that is walking in your shoes, somebody you can identify with. And some of them have built very meaningful relationships. And we're really big on partnership of other and collaboration with other organizations in the area. You know, that way they know what we're doing. We can share information in between and support one another. So most of our funding is through fundraising. We have gotten some grants through the state of Texas and donations.
Mm-hmm. That is so awesome. And yes, you and I talked that maybe if you are able to have one this August, this resource fair, that I yes. will be able to head down there and yes. be part of that this year. I have friends in the area. We determined where you are and that I have some friends and some family that are not too far from where that event would be held. So if you happen to be watching, friends and family who are in that part of Texas, you know who you are, because I only have a section in Texas. So
yes.
they're not all over the place.
Yeah,
that's
so
the section
hoping,
I'm talking about.
We're hoping that we will be able to do it and look forward to having you there. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And something that you mentioned that I want to go back to, you talked about camps and mm-hmm. how sometimes kids with special needs aren't accepted at a lot of the camps. And then sometimes, depending, as you mentioned, behaviors, they're not even accepted at the special needs camps.
Yes.
So speak to that a little bit, if you would, because yes. I don't think that's something that, you know, a lot of people realize is,
yes.
you know, oh, I might be able to send my kid to summer camp, you know, whether it's an overnight camp or a day camp. And so that's what they're going to do, you know, six times over the summer. But
right.
often that's yeah. not in the availability.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah. There are camps that are just not equipped for staffing and also liability. They may not be trained to handle kids that have more behaviors or kids that are not potty trained or kids that are not ambulatory. So those kids are not able to attend those camps. Whereas our camp, they can. We can take kids with, you know, with behaviors. We take kids that are not, you know, ambulatory. They may be in a wheelchair. So we can take those kids in our facility. It's set up. We have the space. And we're not restricted on age. So you can bring anywhere from an 8-year-old to a 32-year-old, you know, and they're going to get adaptive, you know, whatever they can participate in. They're going to get adaptive yoga. They're going to get adaptive PE. They're going to get adaptive karate, adaptive music. We're going to do some arts and crafts. They're going to be able to interface with their peers as well. And what we do there, which we're super excited about, is some of our volunteers are typical developing children, because we also need to bridge that gap of compassion. Right. Yep. So the key, you know, because there's a lot of bullying that takes place. So this way, parents can bring their kids that are out for summer, out for Christmas break, and allow them to volunteer and be a peer and be a buddy to someone with a disability. And one parent that brought her kid to volunteer last summer, her son told her, "I did not know how cool a special needs kid could be." And the mom just like, she's like, "That was it for me."
Yeah.
She's like, that was it. That was it for her. She's, cause he's an only child and, you know, he hasn't really interfaced. And she says, and she's always getting on him, because when they would be out in the community, he would be like staring, you know, like looking at a kid that, you know, like, "What's wrong with him?" kind of thing. But he is super sensitive, you know, after being able to interface and understand why they can't talk or how they communicate. So that has been a huge collaboration for us, is just being able to give our kids an opportunity to interface and have a buddy and have a peer and just bridge that gap for compassion, you know, which helps with bullying.
And that's, mm-hmm. It's such a, like, duh, why don't we do this kind of a thing? But it is so much overlooked. I mean, when I think about me as a special education teacher and in my classroom, how, and even now as I help parents writing up an IEP with their IEP, their child's IEP team, you know, we spend so much time focusing on how to help the child who's going to go back into the classroom and be included. And we don't spend time with the other kids and explain and teach them how to include. We just, so often we just, okay, well, you're going to go to this class for this subject and now you're included. No, mm-hmm. That's not really it. I mean, there's the whole, and to be honest, I would say most of the parents that I speak to, and you probably have more experience even than I do with this, want their child in the inclusion for the social part of it.
Yes, they do.
And so here we are, we're putting them in there, but then we're not teaching anybody besides the one how to socially interact and how to be inclusive. And so to have that in your camps is such a brilliant idea. And mm-hmm. again, it's like, why are we, our focus is wrong.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I know. We could be working with 25 people.
Yes.
And this other one to bring them together.
Yes.
But we expect that the 25 are just going to know how to.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And then we get frustrated when it doesn't happen.
It's like, you know, taking advantage of those teachable moments, because they, you know, they don't understand. I mean, really, I mean, it's like, what, you know, and to see them and how much, and we give them the responsibility. Okay. You know, like, Tez is your responsibility. You got to keep your eyes on him. You got to make sure that he's safe. You got to make sure that he's participating. You got to make sure that he gets a turn, make sure he gets to catch the ball. You know, it's, they're just excited. They're excited to help. You know, when they see, like, wow, you know, and then we celebrate, you know, and, you know, this has really helped me just celebrate small victories. We celebrate everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. And I had a similar thing when I taught. I had a great opportunity to, and I called it my buddy program. And I brought in the gen ed students for a half an hour a day. Yes. And I paired them up with each of the students that I had. It had been determined that it was appropriate that they stay with me most of their day. And so we brought these gen ed students in, and then we taught them how to play games and how to interact. And mm-hmm. when I first started the program, I had maybe, you know, a 5% or 10% volunteer rate from the junior high students. And by the time the program ended, when I, the students had all graduated that needed that intense services, which was about 7 years later, I had a 95 to 98% volunteer rate from the junior high students, because wow. they did start hearing their classmates talk about, this is really fun. Yes. And, you know, so-and-so isn't what I thought. And so giving them that exposure. And then, like I said, we taught them, because it was myself, and I usually had at least one individual aide that was in the room, and sometimes even a classroom aide. And we would teach them how to do that interacting and how to play the games and how to wait and be patient when their person that mm-hmm. they were playing with didn't respond immediately, or what to do when they didn't respond with, you know, an appropriate yes. or an acceptable behavior, you know. And it was just, and I heard that comment so much of, you know, this is so cool, or that person is so much yes. cooler than I thought, or this was, you know, I mean, I had students that I haven't ever followed up, so I don't know if this happened, but they told me then, or maybe a couple years later in high school, that, you know, I'm going to go into occupational therapy or physical therapy or become a special education teacher because of my experiences yes. in the buddy program. And I recently yes, had yep. someone, and she's out of college now for 2 or 3 years. And I ran into her recently, and she said, you know, my favorite part about junior high was being one of your buddies.
Wow. That's awesome. That yeah, is awesome.
yeah. She's like, that was my favorite place to be, was in your classroom. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what we need to do.
Yes,
that's what we need to do with the adults. That's what we need to do with yeah. everybody. And while this doesn't exactly do that, it does help that, you know, I'm saying, look, these are everyday people. I'm not pulling
yes.
the, you know, the one that made it in the movie career, or the one that made it in, you know, this or that. Every week I'm bringing, quote unquote, your average person. And helping to tell their story, because I'm hoping that will change the perspective and,
that's right.
and get people to be more inclusive and welcoming. And that's actually part of the title of the book, is Those Who Can't Teach: True Stories of Special Needs Families to Promote Acceptance, Inclusion, and Empathy.
Mm.
And so, you know, just trying to do my part. This is the passion that God has given me mm-hmm. is, you know, to bring awareness to people who are different. In this particular way, it's different because they have a disability, but it's truly take time and get to know the individual.
Yes.
I recently heard somebody say, you know, we all have the last name being, we're all human beings and we're all the same in that way. And I just thought that was really, really beautiful. And I want to pop this up because it is almost time to wrap up, and Michael knows that. Deborah, you keep up this amazing work. What you are doing is truly a blessing.
Oh, thank you.
So we do have just about a minute. So is there anything else that you want to add that you want to make sure gets out there before we wrap up?
No, I'm just grateful for, you know, this platform, and I appreciate you and what you're doing, because it's, you know, it's individuals like yourself that to help bridge the gap. We can't do it alone. I tell everybody, I can't do what I do without you. You know, even though I'm walking this, it takes everyone around us just doing a little bit. So this little bit that you're doing is a lot, because you're helping keep it on the front and giving individuals like myself and Gina and others an opportunity to connect and intersect, just to help, right? Every little bit helps. And we don't know where that parent is that's just hanging on, that just needs hope and encouragement. And they, you know, click onto your show and they hear something that you said, or they identify with my plight and they realize that they're not alone. You know, my yeah. trainer said to me yesterday, he was in a room and he says, I'm by myself, but I'm not alone. You know, there is a difference. Mm-hmm. And there are times in my life when I'm here with Dominique and I'm by myself, but I'm not alone. You know, God is with me and the support that he has given me is with me. They're just a phone call or a street away. And I'm grateful for that because this is a major toll on individuals and we can't make it without you. We can't. It's a huge task and we know that there is a purpose behind it, but we need a team. And yeah. So I'm grateful to be able to be a team for other parents and give them a safe place and provide those resources. But by the same token, I'm benefiting from that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you.
Thank you
for those kind words. Mm-hmm. And thank you again for being on today. And anybody who is watching, Michael showed you how to do it. You just give me a hashtag. He happened to say live because he was with us. But if you're watching it in the replay, give me a hashtag replay. If you have anything that you would like to ask Deborah, you can either go directly to the website. And it was just Dominique Cares, right?
Yes.
Yeah, DominiqueCares.com.
Yes.
And, or you can send the message to me and I will make sure to get it to Deborah. Again, Deborah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Guys, tune in next week a little bit early because my guest has something to do afterwards, but she didn't want us to have to cut our session short. It's Emily Melios from Launch Consulting. She's going to talk to us about what it's like to have a child with a gifted IEP. Mm. And that'll be a first for hashtag No Limits. So we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.